All right. Topic for today is periods in Jewish history. So I gave you this sheet about 30 years ago. I sat down and I just wanted to make up some sort of timeline of Jewish history with other major events or personalities that were going on at that time. And when I was in high school, I would learn in the morning Jewish studies, and then in the afternoon learn general studies. And it never dawned upon me that Benjamin Franklin and the Vilna Gaon could be contemporaries, because they were just different classes, different parts of the day. So this was more for me to give me some sort of perspective. If it helps you, great. But here's what I would like to give you. General stuff you need to know. As Baruch said, the first Mishnah in Perkei Avot sort of goes through Moshe Kibida Torah Misinai, Umasra Yeshua, Shua Skenim, Skenim Nevi'im, Nevi'im Asra Anshei Knesset Agadola, and then we go from there. We have, so this is what you need to know. The Anshei Knesset Agadola, they go until the Zugot, okay? If you remember in Perkei Avot, after the Anshei Knesset Agadola, we start off with Shimon HaTzadik was like the end of the Anshei Knesset Agadola, and then the next Mishnayot start talking about two people. Each of these Mishnahs, you have like Nitai Arbeli, Shimon Ben Shetach, and all these different names that are there. And they're known as the Zugot. I'll explain all of these terms in a second. That period from the Anshei Knesset Agadola to the Zugot is roughly 200 years. Okay? The Zugot until like the other Tanayim is like another 200 years. Like the Zugot, I'm sorry, I take it back. Anshei Knesset Agadola until the Zugot is about 200 years. Zugot until the Tanayim is like another 200 years. Then you have, and when is that? That's around the year 30 of the Common Era. And the Tanayim, then another roughly 200 years. So when's the Mishnah put into writing? What do we put over here on this thing? 188, right? So let's say roughly 200 of the Common Era is when the Mishnah is put into writing. The Amoraim are roughly until the year 500 of the Common Era, okay? And that's the, comes to a close with the writing of the Talmud, right? The end of the period of the Tanayim is the editing of the Mishnah. The end of the period of the Gemara, of the Amoraim, is when the Gemara is put into writing. When I say Gemara, I'm referring right now to the Talmud Bavli. That's roughly, you look on the sheet, I gave you more precise things, but say roughly the year 500 of the Common Era. Then you have about 100 years of the Savorayim, or the Saborayim for some, right? Savorayim. And then you have, they do the final editing. And then you have the Gaonim. The Gaonim lasts roughly till the year 1000. Okay, you see that over here, roughly the year 1000. And then the Rishonim are roughly till the year 1500. Okay, the year 1500, roughly around then, is when we have the expulsion from Spain. It's when we have the writing of the Shulchan Aruch. We have the printing press. Like the way the Rambam looked at the Gemara and said, so, the Gemara was accepted by all, so the Shulchan Aruch sort of became accepted by all as well. And commentaries now, instead of necessarily arguing, they were commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, their own Shulchan Aruch, they were commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch. So that because sort of became like the final word with addendums to it, the way that the Gemara became the final word with people, writing commentaries on it. Which is an interesting thing, they're writing your own alternate Perush, people wrote commentaries on. Someone asked me the other day, like, it's interesting, Rishonim wrote a commentary on instead of writing their own Gemara, right? So the Gemara became the end, and people commented. Shulchan Aruch became the end, people commented. And then the next, from around 1500, we have the period of the Achronim. Until when?
Well, technically nowadays.
Yeah, so it seems to me that we will have an ending, and there'll be a new period, right? My guess is the cutoff day will be the Holocaust, right? The way that the expulsion from Spain was sort of like the cutoff, there will be this other major event, But it takes a while. It takes probably like 100 years or so till people look back and say, oh, you can clearly see a difference in the style of learning between pre, you know, this cutoff point and post. So one of my Rebbeim, Rav Aaron Rakefet, he wanted to argue that maybe this second period would be called the Ma'asvim. If you look at the later day people, instead of writing, for the most part, okay, there's a stereotype, for the most part, instead of writing their own Chidushim, you have all sorts of these handbooks that we see. We look around the library here, and it's like, okay, we look, put in the computer, we bring up all the halakhot that there are on this topic. Shiluach HaKain, you know, like, or whatever it is. Okay, all the halakhot you want to know on Borer. So, what you have is basically someone gathered the Ma'asvin, not necessarily making their own Chidushim, but they're gathering what everyone said on this particular topic. And you're seeing more and more Sfarim written in that style. Even Rav Avadia's Shelot and Shuvot are pretty much like that, where he gathers what everyone says on the topic. And that will probably be the, you know, another demarcation. It'll be another name. But right now, we're still calling them Achronim. Maybe people will say Achroni Achronim, but it'll be the end. So now that we mentioned the names, I want to go back and discuss a little bit more in depth. The Anshei Knesset Gedola, what do we know? How many people comprise the Anshei Knesset Gedola? Nope, 120. The Knesset that we have in Israel is patterned on that same number. Okay, they were the most eminent Talmidei Chacham, including some Nevi'im. Who was in the Anshei Knesset Gedola?
Mordechai.
Good, who else?
Mishael.
Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi. Also, what did we just learn? Ezra, Nehemiah, okay? Ezra's the head of this, okay? But we have all of these famous people that are there. Ezra's in charge. When we had spoken earlier about Takanas Ezra, like what did Ezra do? He's the one that said we read not just three psukim, but we read 10 psukim every time we leave from the Torah. That we have a Meturgaman that translates. We had Megillah last year. That's, we kept calling it Takanas Ezra, but it's Ezra as the head of the son of the Anshei Knesset Gedola. Right? The Anshei Knesset Gedola were making these decisions. They looked and they said, look, all these Jews are coming back from Babel. They don't speak Hebrew. What good is Kriyas HaTorah? No, Art Scroll didn't exist yet. No one was able to like sit there and read the English translation. So they translated into the vernacular. What was the vernacular for them? Aramaic. So that's why you have a Meturgaman that Pasuk by Pasuk was translating what was being read. The Anshei Knesset Gedola, they laid the groundwork for the Siddur. Okay, the Amidah, them. Brachot, them. Tfilot, Kiddush, Havdalah. You know, what we recognize as standard daily Judaism was established by the Anshei Knesset Gedola. If you go back in time before that, you wouldn't really know a lot. You wouldn't recognize Judaism. It would be very different. People just did things on their own. Same way that the Avos davened on their own freestyle tefillah. People probably said their own brachot, freestyle tefillah. I guess the way the Christians sit around and have their Sunday dinner, at least that's what happens in blue, what's it called, blue bloods. You know, and they say, oh, say grace, and then each person says their own little tefillah. So I guess that's what people say. I mean, their own little brachot before they ate. And Anshei Knesset Gedola said, no, here's the brachot, we make it on this. You have to eat this shear, here's the bracha achrona. All of that was established by the Anshei Knesset Gedola. They're the ones that also canonized the Tanakh.
It's a
Anshei Knesset Gedola. Okay? Canonized
that's
Tanakh.
God.
What?
That's from God.
No. Okay. Now, in Perkei Avot, it mentions that Shimon HaTzadik was the last member of the Anshei Knesset Gedola. He served as Kohen Gadol for how many years?
70.
40 years. And it was considered to be the most like blessed period in Jewish history for Am Yisrael. There's they have all these different things that you see. If the Kohen Gadol reaches his hand in to choose which seir is going to be La'azazel, which seir is going to be offered as a korban on Yom Kippur, if the seir that's going to be offered as a korban came out in the right hand, which is La'Hashem, that was considered blessed. 40 years in a row. You guys, like flipping a coin and 40 times in a row, ending on heads. 40 years in a row, it happened. Every single time when he was Kohen Gadol, when they threw the Seir La'Azazel off the mountain, the white, say the red crimson string in the Beit HaMikdash turned white and everyone was blown away. Happened 40 years in a row. Okay? And then the most famous story, it's like Gemara in Yuma, talks about when he met Alexander the Great. Right? He sees Alexander the Great and he's going out to try to stop Alexander the Great from conquering the Jews because the Jews sided with the Persians since they had given them permission to build Beit Sheni. They bid on the wrong team. The Greeks won. Alexander the Great was coming to teach them a lesson. Shimon HaTzadik went to try to persuade him not to attack. And when Alexander the Great sees Shimon HaTzadik, according to Gemara, he jumps off his horse, he bows down to him, so do the people. And he tells all of his men, every time before I would go into battle, I would have a vision of this holy person who was pushing me on to victory. And that person was none other than Shimon HaTzadik, this person over here. And then he said, you know what? I'm going to let you guys do. I'll let you put up a big statue of me in your temple. That was very, you know, magnanimous on his part. Didn't let everyone do that. And Shimon HaTzadik said, I have a better idea. Every male child born this year will be called Alex. Alexander. Okay? And lots of Jews till today walk around. Their Hebrew name is Alexander. Okay? This is what the Gemara says. Story of Shimon HaTzadik, Anshei Kinsa Gedola. Now, this is Zugot. What?
Doesn't he attack us later on during during?
He doesn't. He's dead. We're talking about with the Chashmonim, it's later. Now, the Zugot. The Zugot is the way it worked. You had 200 years with a, what were they? Nasi, good. The Nasi and the Av Basin. And if you look in those Mishnayot and Perkei Avot, they only list two people. Rav Shmuel Gaon says, why? Because there was uniformity in Halacha. There was no machloket. There was no need to say the names of all these people who just agreed it was said by, you know, the Rosh Yeshiva. So therefore, we only have these two names because there was no machloket. The last of the Zugot, we finally have our first machloket. The first historical machloket is between Hillel and Shammai. Hillel and Shammai had a grand total of three machlokot. What? That was it. Hillel and Shammai had three machlokot. But their students, Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai had hundreds. But Hillel and Shammai really only had three machlokot.
What are they? Hanukkah?
That's Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. Okay, the one that they argue about, the first one, is about whether or not you have to press down on the head of an animal when Yontif falls down, when you bring a carbon on Yontif falls out on Shabbos. It was a whole, that was like a thing they... Hillel versus Shammai, and if I remember correctly, it's a Mishnah in Chagiga where they discuss it. They talk about the different views. Now, the Nasi, he became de facto the leader because at the end of Beit Sheni, the Kohen Gadol was a bought position. He couldn't be trusted to be a spiritual leader. Many Tzdukim became the Kohen Gadol. That's why it tells us that we tied a cord to their legs because if they went into the Kodesh Kedashim and weren't worthy on Yom Kippur, so they would drop dead and we had to pull them out. Okay, so they were entrusted to be spiritual leaders. We had the Nasi. The Rambam refers to Nasi as the Rosh Yeshiva. He was the head, and he was the head of the Sanhedrin. And with the Av Beis Din was sort of like the vice president. So these were the two names that you have in the Zugot. After the period of the Zugot, you know, with Hillel and Shammai, we start, once we have Machloket, we now start having what we call the Tanoim. Okay? The Tanoim, this period lasts until when? When does Tanoim last till? Okay. Lasts until Rebbe decides to put the Mishnah into writing. Okay? He decides to put it into print, editing manuscripts. That already people were keeping their own private manuscripts, and right, and he organized them. He made what we have. How many Siddurim do we have? And how many Masechtas do we have? I think 63. 63 Masechtot. Okay?
He then,
right? Then he organized the Masechtot into Prakim and Prakim into Mishnayot. He was super organized. He does this when there was still peace, before we've forgotten, based on what pasuk? Do you know the pasuk? Pasuk in the Daniel says, Eit lasot lashem, it's time to act for God. Hefiru tarasecha. Okay, literally means they are destroying the Torah. They're breaking the Torah. But his drasha was, let's break the Torah. Torah, you're not really allowed to write down Torah Shabbat Pem. But if we don't, it's going to be forgotten. So therefore, he felt the need to put into writing the Torah Shabbat Pem. When the Tanoim ends, the Torah centers begins to move to Bavel. Okay, where had the Mishnah been written? Eretz Yisrael. And therefore we see a change in language. The Mishnah is written in what language?
Hebrew.
And then the Talmud is written in what language?
Aramaic.
Okay, even the Rishalmi is written in Aramaic. It was a different type of Aramaic. But as Aramaic, all Tanaitic literature is written in Hebrew. So whenever we have an Argamara Hebrew, it's coming from a Braisa, Tosefta, Mishnah. These are all from the periods of the Tanaim. Okay? We then move to the period of the Amorayim. And we see a demarcation between the Tanaim and Amorayim by words such as Mesve or Tiyufta. You know, sort of like saying, how could you, Mir Amora, say that? I've got an earlier Tana who says otherwise. And once I can bring a proof from a Tana, you lose. Tiyufta, you know, the Rabbi Yochanan Tiyufta, right? Just based on the fact that I can bring an earlier source. Okay, now, every so often, if you were in that bridge, like Rav was like the bridge, the end of the Tanaim, beginning of the Amorayim, so the Gemara would have Rav arguing on Tanaim, and when they say, how could he do it? They would say, Rav Tana hu upalig. Rav himself viewed himself as a Tana, and therefore he felt it was okay for him to argue. Now, who puts together the Gemara? Good. Rabbi Rabashi, they edit the Talmud. The Gemara says it's Sof Hora, the end of Paskening. Rav Soloveitchik explained that the quality of learning is different when you have to remember everything. It's all oral. But think how much you have to concentrate if you're not allowed to write things down. You have to remember everything, as opposed to if you have a text in front of you. And therefore, the Tanoim, who, you know, everything was oral for them, they're on a higher level than the Gemara. And the Gemara now also becomes the end of the period, the Sof Hora. And you say, Rabbeinu Rashi, so far, you can't argue on the Gemara. Okay, you can't come along and say, I'm going to hold like Beit Shammai. And because of persecutions, this was put into writing as well. Then we get to this not well-known period, Rabbanan Savarai. Rabbanan Savarai do the final editing over like the next century. Less than 1% of Shas is from Rabbanan Savarai. For example, the first couple of pages of Kedushin is Rabbanan Savarai. That's what all the Rishonim say. And that's why it's not weird that a few pages later, the Gemara starts dealing with the same issues that you had the first couple of pages of Kedushin, because it's from a different time period. The Rabbanan Savarai came later, and they just give more drushes. We don't have any names really in the first few pages of Kedushin. Give more drushes. It was a different type of final editing that was put in. But as I said, over 99% of Shas is from the Amorayim, and the Rabbanan Savarai do some like final editing. With the end of persecutions, big yeshivas start to pop up in Sura and Pampadisa. They're reopened. They had been Torah centers in the period of the Amorayim, and now there was persecutions, but now it reopens, and the period of the Gaonim begins. The Gaon was the religious leader, the Rosh Yeshiva, and the Reish Galusa was the governor. During Persian rule, the Jews were given autonomy, and therefore they had their own governors, their own judicial system, and you had a governor that was in charge of keeping law and order on behalf of the Persians. He was the Reish Galusa, and you had the Gaon, who was in charge of the spiritual religious growth. Famous Gaonim include Rav Saadi Gaon. Okay, they become famous for us because we have still extant some of their svarim. So Rav Saadi Gaon, we have his Emunot V'Deot. He has a whole philosophy trying to explain why the rabbinic Judaism is more correct than the Karaites, and giving rational reasons behind mitzvot. We have Rav Amram Gaon, who was the first to write a sitter. And then, what did you say? Good. We have Shur Gaon and Rav Hai Gaon. Okay, Rav Shur Gaon was towards the end, he wrote a famous letter tracing all of Jewish history until his time. And his son, Rav Chai Gaon, he is the end of the Gaonim. He's the one that we have the most Shilat and Shuvot that were written by him, Rav Shvira Gaon and Rav Chai Gaon. Now, the famous story that the Radbaz tells about a pirate ship, okay? We spoke about it, I think, before, that pirates kidnapped, they hijacked a ship that had four rabbis who were out fundraising on behalf of the yeshivas in Bavel. And the pirates, when they realized the treasure that they had, ransomed each one of these rabbis to a different Jewish community. And they paid an exorbitant fee. And each one of these rabbis then stayed as a hakara satov, gratitude for having their lives saved. And they built up Torah centers. We have older names, but one of the names is Rab Chushiel. He goes to North Africa, and his son is Rabbeinu Hananel. Rabbeinu Hananel in most of our Gemaras. Rabbeinu Hananel was the Rebbe of the Rif. Okay? The Rif, most of us have learned. The Rif's Talmud is the Rimi Gash. The Rimi Gash Talmud was Rav Maimon. Rav Maimon's son in Talmud was the Rambam. So the Rambam can trace himself through the Rif back to Rav Chushiel from this pirate ship. This is, you know, started in North Africa, made its way to the Rambam in Spain. Now, the period of the Rishonim, as I said, is roughly the year 1000 to the year 1500. This was what we call in just general history the medieval period. The medieval period ends with the Renaissance. The Renaissance means like the age of discovery, which is referred to more as the modern period. Okay? The Rishonim clearly did not identify themselves as Rishonim. Okay, sort of like no one called World War One World War One. Okay? You know, what was World War One called during that time?
The Great War.
The Great War. So Rishonim clearly did not say, hey, we're the Rishonim. In fact, some Rishonim referred to the Gaonim as Rishonim, the people that appeared before them. They certainly didn't view themselves as Rishonim. But with our perspective, we view this period roughly from 1000 to 1500 as the Rishonim. And then we hit the period of the Achronim. Now, like the Amoraim didn't argue on the Tanaim, for the most part, Achronim don't really argue on Rishonim. Right? They sort of accepted the Rishonim being closer to Sinai. Sort of like the famous story that we're all familiar with, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky on the plane, where he's sitting next to a secular Jew, and the secular Jew is blown away by Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky's grandson, checking on him all the time, helping him, can I get you food, let me take off your shoes, put on slippers, and like says, wow, your grandson cares for you so much, my grandson doesn't even like talk to me. He goes, obviously, because you brought him up to think that Darwin is correct, and every generation further away from the monkey is more advanced. My grandson was brought up to believe that every generation closer to Sinai has more to give. So the Achronim, for the most part, looked at the Rishonim and said, okay, they're Rishonim, I don't argue. Except for the most part, because famously the Vilna Gaon argued hundreds and hundreds of times and didn't feel that he was beholden to anyone. And it wasn't just the Vilna Gaon, many Achronim learned Gemaras and decided, based on the Gemara, what the Pshat is, what halacha should be, without looking at Rishonim, or maybe only looking at, say, the Rambam, and not really much other things, even though there were several hundred years of people writing commentaries. They said, no, I don't need to look at that. So it's not just the Vilna Gaon, but like I said, for the most part, people felt, who am I compared to the Rishonim? I'll end with one just interesting insight. Not sure I have a good reason, but Rishonim are primarily known by their names. Achronim are primarily known by their books. It's a strange thing, right? We know of the Nodi Bihud and the Pnei Yoshua, okay? You ask in this yeshiva who wrote the Mishnah Berurah, the answer is the Chafetz Chaim, right? No one knows names, just names of books, okay? It's in Hasidic literature as well. We have the Sfas Emes and the Nesiva Shalom and what?
Tanya.
Right, Balatanya. So, like, you have all sorts of books. So, I think the reason might be because I said one of the demarcations is the printing press. That was a demarcation between Rishonim and Achronim. So, How did people become familiar with Achronim? Through their books. Before there was a printing press, you became familiar with a Rishon because you learned from him. And you started quoting what he said. But now, how do we become familiar with, you know, I don't know, the Ksos? They started learning the Ksos. They have no idea what the Ksos is. They picked up the Ksos. So people started learning Svarim. They might even look in the beginning and say, who wrote this? But on the cover, it didn't even say it. So people learned the books and then maybe even looked into who is the author of this book. But it was the book that was important to them. Also, it's sort of weird, but the Rishonim, they don't look for catchy titles. It was just Chidushi HaRashba, you know? They didn't like say, hey, let me think of a cute name for this. And the Achronim all got these cute names. They like, no, the Yehuda, I'll name this after my father. The, you know, Tzlach, Tzil, Nevesh Chan, name is my mother. Like, you know, people have all sorts of things. Oh, my name is Naftali, so I'll call it something, you know, Merome Sadeh, because, you know, that's what Sheva Naftali, it was Merome Sadeh, you know, the Netziv, the Gor Aryeh. Like, so, like, people came up with all these fancy names. Why that is, I don't know. Maybe it goes back to the fact that they wanted their book to sell. So they came up with fancy names. They just wrote Chidushe Rebbe Usher Ginsburg. So, you know, who the heck is Usher Ginsburg? But, oh, you start writing down cool names. People say, oh, that sounds interesting. Let's go read that book. So I don't know, but I'm pretty sure, that's my guess. I don't know. I don't know if anyone ever even, like, decided to discuss this. Just, it's bothering me. But, like, Achronim are primarily known by the names of their books, unless they're contemporaries. Like, oh, you know, like, you learned by Rav Soloveitchik, so they go, oh, Rav Soloveitchik, the Rav. Or your student of Rav Moshe Feinstein, go to Rav Moshe Feinstein. But probably in another generation, people would just say, oh, the Igros Moshe. Okay? But when people still knew Rav Moshe, they're saying, oh, Rav Moshe. But they'll probably just call it the Igros Moshe later, just like we say the Chassam Sofer. But I assume in his day, you know, some of those who knew him were calling him, oh, Rav Moshe Sofer said. But once his book came out, it's just the Chassam Sofer. Right? So it is an interesting thing. Like I said, no idea really why that is, but you do have this weird thing that the Achronim are known by their books. As we said, people don't even know Rabbi Yisrael Meir Kagan wrote both the Mishnah Berurah and the Chafetz Chaim. They just think, yeah, the Chafetz Chaim wrote the Mishnah Berurah.
Sounds like a name, Chafetz Chaim.
Chafetz Chaim. Chaim's a good name. Yeah, I don't know. But that's it. We'll stop over here.